Kaus thanks Barrel Proof Lounge in Santa Rosa for their underwriting support. Located at 501 Mendocino in the Brickyard Center, they feature live music, karaoke, trivia, comedy, and more. Their website is barrelprooflounge.com, and they can be found on Facebook and Instagram.
Kaus Radio thanks the Sebastopol Kiwanis Club for their support. They're in their 52nd year as a hands-on community service club, with emphasis on the needs of youth in West County. Their website, SebastopolKiwanisClub.org, contains events and contact information about the organization.
Welcome back to Season 2 of The Mountain, an Adoration in a Multitude of Parts. This is your host, Andrew Lewis. If you're just joining us, I strongly recommend, I super strongly recommend, that you go back and listen to the episodes that comprise Part 1. You'll find there's a whole bunch of stories, a little bit of history, and a little bit of God that provides some background for some statues and paintings made in the 1990s in San Diego. And also, eventually, we'll get to a walk that I took to a mountain. In this strange moment that we're living in right now, I'm sure there might be some folks out there listening and thinking to themselves that they might want to just check out, perhaps from this hotel, or perhaps even from life itself. If so, I'd like to ask you to stick around for just a little bit, just for a little while longer, at least. And if you're really feeling alone, feel free to drop me a line or a message, and we can talk. It'd be nice to get to know you. This story is not done yet, and it'd be really, really nice to know how it ends. So, at least for this moment, I'll ask for you to sit down, or perhaps curl up, shut your eyes, and listen. So I'm going to do something a little different here. I'm just going to kind of do an Acapulco cliff dive and start telling stories that I hadn't plan to tell, but why not? It's live radio, so let's make it a high wire act without a net. When I was in third grade, actually fourth grade, I was drafted into a gifted program when I had to transfer and go to a different school. And this program, it actually went by the name of Room 15. That was the room that we were all holed up in. And the teacher, his name was Mr. McKay. Mr. McKay, I didn't know it then. I knew something was wrong. But basically, looking back, I think the guy was a sociopath. At some point, we had an assignment. We had to tell a story. We had to write a story out. And so I didn't know what to do. We sat down. I remember us sitting at these low tables. And the only thing I really came to mind or that came to me was a story by Harry Nilsson, I think. He'd recorded an album. It was called The Point. And I loved it. It was a great story. It had music. It had a winding narrative. And being just a kid in fourth grade, I thought I would write something like that. So I started to tell the story. I had no idea, really, that what I was writing was absolutely 100% derivative. I mean, I was basically copying what Harry Nilsson had done. But the reason I actually feel comfortable telling you this right now and making this confession is that that's how we learn. We copy, right? Like, so if you're learning cursive or you're learning handwriting, do you remember those little dashed outlines of letters, and then you would take your pencil and you would draw it over those lines and you would literally copy those letters and you'd do it 100 times. And that's how you learn to make the letter H or the letter Y or the letter P. And then eventually you'd just get bored with that and you'd start to write on your own, right? So in some ways I was learning how to tell a story, I guess, by retelling Harry Nilsson's Point. I can't quite remember what happened in that story, but in my version, there was a kid, and let's say his name was Oblio, and he didn't have a point. All the other kids in this story had a point. They had pointed heads, but Oblio's head, of course, was round. And so he was going about, and all the other kids who had points would basically tell Oblio that he had no point. And he went off to find a point for himself. And he left his magical land and went off on all these even more magical adventures. So I started on this story, and I think it was supposed to be a page long, but my version got to be 2 pages and 3 pages. And then the next day we were supposed to sit down and maybe edit our story, but I just kept writing 4 pages, 5 pages, 6 pages, 7 pages. And then we were maybe supposed to do a little bit more polishing on the third day. And then I think on that day, sat down in a circle and we were all supposed to read our stories. Well, at this point, I was into chapter 2 or 3. I was far from done. And I sat there and I read what I had, and it was a lot. And I read it all. And then at the end, there was kind of a very short silence before Mr. McKay spoke up. And he said to all the kids in the classroom, "Well, that was pretty pointless." So why would I do that? Why would a kid in fourth grade set off on such a titanic task to write a novel, basically? I mean, really, it was an absurd idea. It was something that just far outstripped my abilities, right? So this morning I was thinking about that. Like, why did I do that? And the first thing that came to mind was I thought of our mom, who at that point had kind of sort of given up on us and would go away. She'd disappear for days at a time, leave my brother and I to our own devices. And my brother and I discovered that in our house, in some closet or maybe in the garage, we found a heat gun. It was a gun that was used, sort of a long metal bar that you'd heat up to a really high temperature, and you'd use it to melt paint. You'd use it for stripping paint. Especially at that point, you would use it because all paint was lead-based. So my brother and I would go to his bedroom door. We were bored, and we would start to drag that hot metal. We'd plug in this paint, what he would call it, melter peat gun, and we would drag it down along the door and melt the paint. It would become gooey, and I remember the smell of it. It smelled so delightful and so sweet, and it was literally intoxicating. So my brother and I would just stand there for a half hour, maybe an hour at a time, just melting the lead paint and kind of getting high on the fumes. It was really, really pleasant. And it was kind of cool because you actually felt like you might be making progress as the door was slowly obliterated. So maybe that's it. Maybe I just simply breathed in too much lead paint, and it cast me into some kind of weird ADHD where every time I had a thought, I would think of another thought, and it would lead to another thought, and all of these thoughts would just cascade in this torrent all simultaneously, all at once. And there was so much, there were so many thoughts that were all being generated laterally that I just couldn't even get them down. It was just this waterfall that I couldn't contain. You could perhaps call that a disability, or perhaps it's also my superpower. But maybe there's something else. You know, why do we not complete things? Why do we let things become interminable? You might think of Penelope, Odysseus's long-suffering wife, and how, at least as the story goes, she had to forestall all the suitors that were knocking at her door as she awaited for Odysseus to return from a voyage, and perhaps a voyage from which he might never return. And Penelope, I think, had to continually weave, perhaps it was her wedding gown or her wedding shroud, and she told her suitors, "When I'm done, when I've completed this, then I shall marry one of you." And then each night she unraveled that cloak, and she'd begin again the very next day. And I think it's often cast that this was an example, an instantiation of Penelope's faithfulness, that she wouldn't give up, she wouldn't so easily give herself away to all of these men who were waiting to take her hand. But perhaps it was something else. Perhaps it was fear of what her life would become if she actually completed this garment. Because wedding gowns were also funeral shrouds, right? So each night, by unweaving her work, she was forestalling her own death. She was granting herself a kind of eternity, a lifefulness, a deathlessness. Or perhaps it actually is a faithfulness to the story, that there's so much contained in any single thing that happens, that to be faithful to it, you have to just gather your arms wide and pull into the fold of your being all of the aspects, all of the details, and try and deliver it in the fullest, most complete, most elaborate, most filigreed way that you possibly can. You need to tell the story in its entirety, but then you're perhaps unaware that you're not even equipped to do such a thing. Or perhaps it's integral to faith. That idea that we never arrive at a satisfying resolution, that the end never really will come, but we're still waiting and waiting for the story of the return of a person so that this story can come to an end. And we wait and we wait, and yet we do not know if that end will ever happen.
saw the back of my daddy's hand, lost your mama to the promised land. In my time, I never had a thing that's mine, till they handed me a baby fine, my little girl. Grief and sin, when the righteousness of you sets in, and the blood in my veins begins to ramble on. Now I know we can't stand and judge the execution man, but we all have to make a trembling stand before the sun. Branches carry me before the war, before the wine, before I stole what wasn't mine. Can you bring my baby back to me?
Yesterday, I was with a friend. We hadn't seen each other for a long time, a really long time. Maybe, my God, it might have been 20 or 30 years. We had this moment together, and I just wish it could have been longer. I wish there could have been more, just so much more. But we sat and we talked, and we learned new truths, new unfoldings of each other's lives and our families' lives, and we raise the question, what's truth? I mean, what really do we know about one another? What do we even know at all, right? So for you right now, you're perhaps driving in your car or working in your kitchen, and you hear my voice. It's just a voice, but I'm here. I'm here right now. I'm in a station. And it's a darkened box. Yeah, some fluorescent lighting. There's a wall with a rack of CDs. There's, I'm looking at a basket. It's orange. It has the words lost and found printed on the side. And to my right, a calendar. It's turned to the month of February. There's a picture of a cow, its leg, one leg upstretched. It's doing some sort of yoga pose. Beneath it, there's a quote. It's a quote from Lao Tzu. Nature does not hurry, yet everything is accomplished. So that's part of it. I'm here. I have here-ness. I am here now. And now. And now. But let's take that a little further. I'm even here when you don't hear my voice. Let's try it, just for a moment. I'm still here. That space of silence, that was dead air. You're not supposed to have dead air on radio. I think it's something you're supposed to really, really try and avoid. It's a big faux pas. But it tells us something about here-ness. It's even crazier. Some of you might even be listening to a recording of this. I might not exist anymore. And yet my here-ness is still here. Our here-ness in various forms can persist across time. In this day, it's more and more difficult to know what's true. We see videos on social media, and some, many, perhaps most of them aren't even real. They're figments imagined by digital creators, and we take them for truth. And people tell us things, and we take them for truth. How can we know in this day, in this moment in the 21st century, what's real? Well, let's start with this. Try pinching yourself, perhaps on your wrist. I'm being literal about this. Just do this. Pinch until you can feel it. Perhaps even until you feel displeasure. That feeling in your flesh, the firing of those nerves, that's real. Feel your feet on the floor or the ground. That's real. And if you're feeling alone, if you're feeling disconnected, try this. And again, I'm being really straight here. I really want you to try this. The very next person you see literally in your line of sight, especially if you don't know them, if they're a stranger unto you, say hello. Just try it. If you're shy and you don't want to speak, maybe just try flashing them the peace sign. They may notice and they may respond, or they may not, but acknowledge them. Think about that. I mean, to acknowledge another. What does that mean? In Old English, I believe, nolen meant to admit your knowledge, to understand, or to come to recognize. In acknowledging someone, you bring them into being. Their being, as we know, pre-exists yours. It pre-exists your presence. But in acknowledging someone, you bring their being into your own. So, however slight that gesture might seem, we've created a connection, something larger than ourselves. You, in fact, enlarge your being, and when you enlarge your being, you anchor yourself in this world. There's also the Greek word, nomen. And that also means one that knows or examines. It's also, for those who don't know, it's the part of the sundial that casts the shadow. And the shadow, as we know, it's the outline of oneself. It's the figuring of oneself. So consider this. It may be kind of hard to imagine in our current hyper-mediated environment where we each possess hundreds of thousands of selfies. And in fact, those selfies and whatever falls into the background of those pictures are in some way becoming our primary way of knowing ourselves, of acknowledging ourselves. But there was once a day where a moment in our history, in the history of our species, where a person could not see themselves. Just imagine that. In the absence of a mirror, your shadow was the closest you might ever come to knowing oneself. And even our self-perception is like that shadow. It's a shadow of our true self. So there's a fundamental unknowability, a semblance of knowing that can come only by looking at these shades, at these ghosts. So right now I'm assuming that you exist, that there is a person or a beingness out there to receive this beingness. And that's an article of faith. But I can validate that. I can prove it by acknowledging you. So if you will, in acknowledging you, I bring you into being. So right now in this moment, it's a kind of mutual summoning. I summon you to listen to whatever it is that I have to say. But then you in turn are summoning me into being. You're summoning the story into being, that it's your wish or your expectancy that is allowing the story to happen. I would like to dedicate this season that is upcoming, and it may last for quite some time. I'd like to dedicate it to one Sue Hoppner, who no longer is with us in the forms that we would like her to be, but I'd like to summon her into being. I would like to summon her into the participation of whatever this story is.
Cup I ask silently, all my destinations will accept the one that's me, so I can breathe. Circles they grow and they swallow people whole. After lives they say goodnight to wives they'll never know. And a mind full of questions and a teacher in my soul, and so it goes. Closer or I'll have to go. Holding me like gravity are places that pull. If ever there was someone to keep me at home, it would be you. Everyone I come across in cages they bought. They think of me and my wandering, but I'm never what they thought. Got my indignation, but I'm pure in all my thoughts. I'm alive. Wind in my hair, I feel part of everywhere. Underneath my being is a road that disappears. Late at night I hear the trees, they're singing with the dead. I find a way to be. Consider me a satellite forever orbiting. I knew all the rules, but the rules did not know me. Guaranteed. Thank you.
before we go any further in this mutual needing of one another, I have a confession to make, maybe to you, or perhaps even to God. The confession is this. I began crafting this story in 2020, back during the pandemic. And now it's 6 years later. I'm speaking these words on Friday, February 13th, 2026 at 1:36 p.m. on the eve of my 61st birthday. 6 more years of my ever-shortening life have now gone. I'm older. And the story I'm telling is not that much further along, and that makes me a little sad. It makes me wonder a little bit about what keeps us from doing those things that we were meant to do, and I wonder about all the ways I've undercut myself or set obstacles in place. This show first appeared on Spotify in 2024, and some of the listeners, the folks who began listening then, have been waiting for what coming on 2 years for this story to finish. And I feel like I've let down a lot of friends, that I've let myself down, maybe even that I've succumbed to my failings and have let down those infinite forces and entities that have come together to result in my being. Call it God, or that is, if you believe in such things. Why have these stories taken so long? Why have other stories I've so wanted to tell still not come out? Life intervenes, but also, like others, maybe I was taken away by the breadth of my own imagination. I wanted to tell a story, but that story grew so big that in reality, it could never, ever realistically be told. And then if I completed it, well, what would I do next? Perhaps I'd have to do the work that I really need to do. So over the last few years, I just have kept thinking of new stories to tell, so many that I couldn't speak quickly enough to convey all that was in my head. And now the time is nigh. We don't know what world we're entering. Regulations curtailing the emission of gases contributing to our warming planet have been almost entirely rolled back. And potentates have accumulated vast sums of wealth, and the divide between our own minuscule lives and the expanse of their wealth is vast. We may very well be approaching a civilization-destroying cataclysm. And while some are working to wring the last drop of human connection from our society and the last bit of life from this planet, we're encouraged to not look up. Where this will go and what will come after, I don't know. But we have this mutual summoning. So I'm letting you know, whoever you are, whoever's out there listening, that I shall conclude this, that this will shall be done. And I make that promise to you right here and right now. Why do I tell you this? We confess to unburden our conscience. We confess so that we can be born again. Not in that way that you might see in fundamentalist mega churches that are all about sanctity and being holier than thee and all that. But in a very real, very personal way. I confess so that I can begin again. So that I can free myself of my failings. And I wonder if by calling it, if by making your failings public, if then you really can become whole again.
Let me go back over Oregon. That little scar is nothing in the arms of all the things have yet to come. I'd like to call it no big deal, but we both know I'd be lying. I can never come back if I don't go. Whoa. That plan may have been a waste, but it doesn't mean it wasn't nice. Sometimes you use a sweet lie to get by. Though it's done me well, this place where there's a mountain, there's a sky. There's too much left between to ease my mind. From where we got flowers by the fifth, where we learned backhanded love. Or if you come off clever enough, you don't have to cover anything up. And this city's done me strange, though I'm as courageous as I came. And that courage sure is honest, but can feel like such a fickle thing. Let me go back over Oregon. That little scar is nothing in the arms of all the things have yet to come. I'd like to call it no big deal, but we both know I'd be lying. I can never come back if I don't go. Whoa. Well, explain to me this affinity for name and all those settlements, for things that crop up colorful in spite of all the clouds. Like you know it's there, but don't look down. There's a perfect place that's not quite now. And Jesus has a lot of love, but the good book might not let you out. Let me go back over Oregon. That little scar is nothing in the arms of all the things have yet to come. I'd like to call it no big deal, but we both know I'd be lying. I can never come back if I don't go. And that plan may have been a waste, but we'll make it up sometime. I'll find you when we've grown apart enough. Where there's a candle, there's a light. A shadow dances right behind. Singing, come to me, son, let me test your luck. From where we got flowers by the fifth, where we learned backhanded love. Where if you come off clever enough, you don't have to cover anything up. In this city's done me strange, though I'm as courageous as I came. And that courage sure is honest, but can feel like such a fickle thing. And explain to me this affinity for naming all those settlements, for things that crop up colorful in spite of all the clouds. From the roses city of my birth, the golden man stands in a cherry town, to a road stop named for mountains and women and their family ties, and flowers by the fifth. In spite of all, in spite of all, in spite of all the clouds. Let me go back over Oregon. That little scar is nothing in the arms of all the things have yet to come. Like to call it no big deal, but we both know I'd be lying. I can never come back if I don't go.
So, those of you who've been listening for some time now, you might still be waiting for the bit when I actually go to the mountain. But before we get there, we first have to put our shoes on. We still have a bit of ways to go yet before we begin that journey. So this season, we'll be talking about the first half of John Brockley's installation at the Church of St. Elizabeth Seton in Carlsbad. Sometimes you just have to sit. You have to sit for a very long time just observing so that you can actually see that thing before you. Let me ask you something. It's kind of weird. Does the event precede the telling, or does the telling prefigure the event? Now, you might be somewhere in Sonoma County or perhaps somewhere in the world or at this point maybe even in the galaxy and you're thinking, dude, what are you talking about? In the day-to-day, we just assume that a story happens and then we talk about it. Like, hey, OJ may have just killed his wife, Nicole Simpson, and now he's driving real slow down the 405 interstate. And this shows us the complicated nature of race and celebrity and power and the indeterminacy of truth and greed in America. But maybe it goes the other way. Maybe there's just stuff. And then we fashion a story. And in doing so, we make that thing happen. And the story, it's a different thing entirely from the raw stuff. The facts are that the queen died and then the king died. The story is that the queen died and then the king died of a broken heart. The facts belong to God. The story, that belongs entirely to humans. We tell ourselves the story to make sense of God's facts. Quantum mechanics, alchemical principles, angels on a pin, these are all our attempts to describe God's facts. There were whales, and there were once men that hunted whales, and a whale once destroyed a ship. That's all true. That stuff actually happened. But a mad captain did not chase a white whale and the Godhead to the ends of the earth until Melville wrote Moby Dick. And now, for all time, Ahab is trapped in the passage, trapped in the pages, hunting his whale towards his own completion, again and again and again. And he will never be released from the story that was told. In the end, we may find ourselves honoring the telling as much as the event told. So there you have it. For the next bunch of episodes, we'll be talking about gospel, Godspell, Gottspiel. It's a good spiel, a good story. Some might say a good news story. It's the story of the long, some might say, interminable revelation of God. And we'll talk about the storytellers and the stories that they told, and about some pictures of that story, about how in the Adoration Chapel, in the Church of St. Elizabeth Seton, in the town of Carlsbad, these two things, the story and its representation, along with many other things, came to be wedded. So, lace up your shoes. It's time to go. Oh, This is Andrew Lewis, and welcome back to the second season of The Mountain, an adoration in a multitude of parts. If you're just joining us, I encourage you to listen to season one. You can stream it from the KOWS website, or you can Google The Mountain, an adoration, and you should be able to pull it up on Spotify as well. We opened with the newly minted The Folks from Minnesota from the delightfully named Penka Jane Augustus Chulevsky. The original song, The Warlike Lads of Russia, was penned in the 1800s and appeared in an old English collection of street songs. This one commemorated the defeat of the Emperor Napoleon. It was later resurrected by Nick Jones, I think, and then freshened up just a few weeks ago and is performed by Penka Jane and her band. They're all living in and around Olympia, Washington. A shout out to all those folks lending their creative powers to the defense of our Constitution and basic human decency. Also today, we heard Catcher Song by the Great Lakes Swimmers, Mississippi from the Secret Sisters, Guaranteed from Eddie Vedder, who some of you may know actually comes from San Diego, grew up close to our neighborhood. Back or Over Gone by The Weather Machine, and One Fine Day by David Byrne. If we have time, I'll be sending you out on your way with Long Time Coming by John Hiatt. If you're enjoying, or at the very least are curious about this long and winding story, I encourage you to subscribe to The Mountain Substack. Simply Google The Mountain and Adoration. It'll be the best way to stay notified when new episodes drop, as well as to receive additional content. If you want, you can also search for The Mountain and Adoration on Spotify. And of course, you can listen to the archived radio versions by going to The Mountain page on KOWS. Comments and feedback are welcome. You can post in Spotify or on Substack or drop an email to anadoration@gmail.com. I want to thank you for those of you who might be out there listening. Thank you for summoning me. And in turn, I will do my best until the end of my days to summon you. If you enjoyed the listen and it makes your world a little bigger, consider sharing with your friends. And please, have a great day or a good night wherever you are.
Mm-hmm. Let's see.
Friend of mine's had a long time coming. Been a long time gone. Stood right here, whispered in my ear. All the love gone wrong. I've been living my life like a howling wind, and I can't put out this flame. Friend of mine said a long time coming, coming back again. Silver and gold, but I could never find you. Been living my life like a lonesome whistle blowing. Now I can't turn back. Friend of mine said a long time coming.